Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking to our regular guest from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection today. Laura Sutherland and Michelle Reinen are back with us. Laura's the administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, and Michelle is the Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. So we'll talk with them about what you should know about the latest scams going around, and of course, want to answer your questions as well, and I hope you'll join in. Do you have a consumer concern? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Michelle, good to have you back.
Well, good morning, Larry. Hope you're doing well.
I am, and Laura, thank you for joining us as well.
Hi, Larry. Nice to see you.
Well, here we let's turn to you first, Michelle. As summer's approaching pretty much here, kids have more screen time, if that's possible. And we're looking at the kinds of issues. Let me put it this way. What kinds of issues do children run into on the internet that create problems, Michelle?
Yeah, we're going to answer that question from the consumer protection side of the internet and in our role with that. But, you know, school is ending for the summer and kids will be home for longer periods of time or definitely have that increased screen time. So we want parents to have conversations, guardians to have conversations with kids about malware, email phishing scams, and then, you know, in-app purchases and charges that can happen. And there are things that parents can do as well to control some of that. And at some point, you know, they also give kids a little bit more rope, if you will. And so having the conversations to be sure that they understand the features on the devices and web browsers and really try and limit problems before they arise.
So what are some of the signs maybe that kids are engaging in unsafe behavior? Let's put it that way.
Yeah. So if you start getting emails to maybe the house account, if you have one, or if you have your child use your account, or maybe the child has their own email account and the parent or guardian is monitoring that, but you start getting all sorts of different emails asking them to click a link and provide information or download this, or why don't you complete this survey to see what your, you know, royal family name would be, given it's the Jubilee Day. You know, we'll pick that scheme that's out there. Those are going to be signs that you need to maybe have an intervention or conversation, because you want to try and restrict access to those age-appropriate content. And you can do that as a parent or guardian by using the parental controls. You know, there's specific kid-friendly search engines that limit results to sites that are suitable for children. So you want to, as best you can, be in front of those emails. I mean, those are the warning signs that too much has probably already been given out there and you're on websites that are concerning. So if we can have the conversations in front of getting those emails, consider locking devices with a password so the kids can't download or buy apps without approval. And when I say locking the device with a password, then that means not sharing the password with the child so they can go ahead. You know, there's eyes over shoulders and they see things or that information shared. And I've seen that happen. So certainly you want to control it by not then sharing it. Other things to consider are really trying to, we say, be smart about smartphones. If you want your child to have a smartphone to stay connected over the summer, a lot of houses don't have landlines anymore. So if they're home, you may want them to be able to be in touch when they're home or out and about. Everyone needs to understand the capabilities of the device. Don't have to get them the latest model that can do everything. Maybe you get them kind of a starter phone. Those exist where you can program the numbers they can call into it. and only allow that access and it doesn't have a full data plan. But be sure to research the apps and try them out yourself. That's really important as a parent and guardian to really know how the child is engaged with the internet and what they're doing and what those capabilities are. And of course, you can download and install software updates and set the phone to lock automatically, again, with a password, and turn off those in-app purchase capabilities. Because if a child is out there always getting the latest number of tokens to buy the whatever item there is in the game, that can add up really quickly, and you won't notice till you get that monthly bill, and that can be incredibly expensive.
Yeah. I saw in the paper not long ago a two-year-old, and maybe you saw that, Laura, did you see that, somehow managed to order a whole pile of things from I forget
McDonald's.
Where. What was it?
Wasn't it a two-year-old that ordered a bunch of McDonald's and they showed up at her door with? I think that was more of a reflection of what mom was typically ordering, and there was some easy touches to the phone.
It was like several hundred McBurgers.
Yeah, lots of Big Macs.
Oh my gosh! Well, that one's funny, but there are a lot of them that aren't funny. And so I think it pays to take Michelle and Laura's advice on this when it comes to summer and your kids and the phone. John in Racine has a comment. Let's go there. John, hi.
Hi. I recently tried to get a replacement card for my Menards card, and I called the 1-800 customer service number, and it turns out that that number's been hacked. The tried to issue a MFA and multiple factor authorization. And what happened was it didn't work. They tried sending it 3 times to my other phone. And when it didn't work, they said, well, can you just send us a picture of your driver's license? And I said, I'm not doing that. That's crazy. And I said, you can just send us some other documentation, you know, like last year, a copy of your taxes. I can't believe it. This 1-800 on my credit card has been hacked from the customer service. So I looked up the number on the internet, and it's a completely different number, and it's like a Capital One card.
Hmm.
What's the customer service number on your card anymore?
Oh.
That's
Laura,
that's...
go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's just such, I'm glad he called to tell us about that. And I'm also glad that he knew better than to give that information. I mean, it's really, it just takes one, right, for someone to give you that information online. But he did absolutely what we all often talk about on this show, which is don't trust information that you haven't looked up yourself. And he looked up an independent number and determined that the right number he's supposed to be using, and then also didn't fall for, okay, well, if the authentication didn't work, send us a copy of your tax records. So I'm glad that it didn't fall for that. And hopefully Menards has something up on their website that indicates that it's being hacked. Oftentimes they'll do that. So that's unfortunate.
Thanks again for calling, John. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, if you have a scam or something happened to you or just a question. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Larry from Janesville called but couldn't stay with us. He wants to hear more about the mortgage scams that are out there. You guys know anything about mortgage scams?
I'm not 100% sure what he's referring to. I know the last time we were on, there was concern from a caller that received a letter from a bank where they had their mortgage about a data breach and concerns with that. And that breach did turn out to be legitimate. And, you know, contacting the lender directly rather than through the information in the letter helped confirm that for the consumer. But we also received the notification about that. Other than that, I'm not 100% sure what's being referred to. I mean, we always want to be sure that consumers are dealing with their lender directly. If they're in a situation where they maybe want to refinance, that they are seeking out the information and not just responding to solicitations that are coming at them. And being cautious if you're using the internet to just find the latest, greatest, best deal, because there can be imposters out there. There can also be kind of those who are trying to consolidate your mortgage, you know, if you have other loans or do some refinancing where they're asking for upfront fees for their service before they do anything for you. And that shouldn't be happening. You know, they need to tell you exactly what they're going to do, provide those services before those fees and things. So just those tips out there, not knowing 100% what Larry was seeking.
John from Boyceville also called, couldn't stay with us. He's been getting multiple daily calls from, quote, quote, Amazon, saying he needs to verify purchases. Could you talk, you know, is this a kind of a scam? Are you seeing complaints in that area, Laura?
We are seeing complaints in the Amazon. Amazon scams are pretty prevalent now. And they present the way he described, where you get a text about verifying a purchase, or they, you know, you get a purchase that you didn't order, or you get notified that you're getting a purchase that you didn't order. And there's always a link. It's sort of the same kind of scams that we talk about. It's something that rings true to you. Oh, maybe I did order a purchase, or maybe somebody in my household ordered a purchase, and then there's a link involved. And so that's, of course, the red flag. The beauty of Amazon is if you're an Amazon member and you ordered a purchase, you can just go online and check. So there's never any reason to click a link when you get a link. You should always independently open up another window, go to Amazon, and type in your account, and you can look for yourself to see whether or not you have an order. Amazon is not going to send you out a link like that. So definitely be wary of those scams that are showing up in your feed.
June is Elder Abuse Awareness Month, and June 15th is World Elder Abuse Awareness Day. A lot to say there. What are some senior scams of note?
Well, it's what isn't the senior scam, really. We've talked about a number of these over time, and just to highlight a few of them, there are a number of imposter scams out there that specifically target seniors. Some of the more popular are the Social Security or Medicare scams. So that government imposter, where you receive that phone call and they pretend to be from the government entity and try to obtain your Social Security number or your money. So again, don't give that out to that random phone call. We've normally seen Social Security and Medicare. Again, just as that reminder tip there. Other senior scams of note, sweepstakes scams. If you receive a call that claims you've won a major prize, despite having never entered that sweepstakes or contest, that is a huge red flag. One of the more popular is the imposter of Publishers Clearing House. We get a lot of calls and inquiries about the having won the truck or this great grand prize that they have, and those are all imposters. They want you to pay for the taxes and fees on the non-existent prize. And what's funny with this one is if you engage, it continues. They call again and need more money to deliver the prize that you've won, and then they'll call again to get even more money from you until you disconnect that. Tech support scams where Microsoft, Apple, or Google is contacting you to tell you that your computer has a virus and they want you to get a standard tech support package from them. Just give them access and they'll take care of it. Grandparent scams where your grandchild is in trouble, needs money immediately, and asks to keep the call a secret. The latest twist we've heard on this from individuals is that there's the excuse as to why the grandchild sounds a little different is because they've hurt their nose. or they have a cold and their nose is plugged. We've certainly heard from consumers a lot about the nose situation. So while it's funny, it's serious because they always want you to wire money or give them a gift card. And then romance scams, that online love interest, or even that online really close friend relationship situation, it turns into something where they end up asking for money because they have a reason why you can't meet, maybe a business venture, a medical issue, so can't afford travel expenses, and so they need assistance and money, and because you're invested emotionally in this, you're willing to help pay for the bill to be able to engage and meet, and so then you lose money and to pay for these things could even be legal expenses. But then this one continues as well, where then you pay for that, but then there's another excuse as to why you can't pay. And this one, while it impacts younger consumers, the financial loss of the romance scheme is significantly increased with our older consumers. And it's one to really be watchful of and have conversations with your friends, church members, others to see who they're interacting with, because this does go on to where people really lose a lot of money.
Michelle Reinen and Lara Sutherland from the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection within the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade and Consumer Protection, our guests today. Questions or comments or maybe an experience to share, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Clara Neupert, our producer today, Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer, Trina LaSousa is our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us today as we talk about consumer protection issues and scams. I can tell you one thing that's not a scam. Tomorrow, we'll be broadcasting live from the shores of Lake Superior. That's an actual thing. We'll be at the Bayfield Pavilion to kick off Bayfield in Bloom. Some experts in vegetable, flower, herb, and perennial gardening on hand, looking at forest health. And we even have a little event, meet and greet event right after that. So if you're in the Bayfield area, or even if you aren't, come on up and join in. It'll be a lot of fun. So that's not a scam. But there are probably some other ones out there you can join in. At 1-800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Vicki in Chaseburg. Hi, Vicki.
Hi. Well, Larry, I am getting older, and I've started doing my mailing packages and things like that from home. And because of limited hours of my little post office, but I had just gotten an email about a package. They're having trouble finding the correct email for a package that I sent. And that when I check the site, site, but it does ask me that to get that package, you know, I have to put my return address in there and then give them, it needs $3 more, and they want a credit card number and the numbers on the back of the card, and then it would cost me an additional $3. Now, how can you find out if that's a scam or not?
Okay. Let's turn to Michelle. You want to take that?
I'll try to take this. So I'm not sure what service she's used to do the mailing, if it's the U.S. Postal Service or if it's a different carrier. But there should be on the receipt that you received, or if you purchased online, the the postage to send it, there should be contact information. And I would reach out directly using that same contact information that's listed there, whether it be an email, a website that you go to and post a question chat, or a phone number. And you would have your shipping number, your confirmation, and inquire with them. Because there are huge shipping scams out there where you get an email, they are able to mirror and re-image the graphics and logos of the major shipping providers out there and ask you to verify or confirm information because there's trouble with either transmitting a package or delivering a package, and they want you to do that confirmation. And while you did just ship something, this seems very suspect that they need additional things. It could be legitimate that the package weighed more than you thought from maybe using a bathroom scale or something, and they need more. But you want to confirm that by using information you have to reach out, and there are different means for you to ask those questions.
Yeah, that's good advice. Good luck, Vicki. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Tim in New Berlin, your turn. Hi, Tim.
Hi, thank you. My son lost his credit card. It was through Bank of America. He lost it. As soon as he lost it, he calls up Bank of America and says that, yeah, cut it off. Well, there was a, before they got that call went through, whoever found it or stole it, I think found it, but they rang up a $200, you know, false charge. We filed a fraud claim, and I've got the letter right here. I'm reading from it. And it said that they're denying the fraud claim because we confirmed your card was used for the charge. True enough, that was true. The chip was read, true. And your PIN was entered, which indicates you or someone you allowed to use your card was present. Well, the card had no PIN, none. So you can't deny, or in fairness, you can't deny the fraud claim because you gave out the PIN when the card had no PIN, if you see what I mean. And they just denied the claim and said, tough luck. And this is with Bank of America, so it makes you wonder if they're they're advertising about how, don't worry about fraud because we'll cover it, sure wasn't true in our case.
Hmm. So is there anything further that Tim can do, or Tim's?
Yeah, concerned? I think it's a good question. I mean, I'm glad that he called it and canceled the card and he filed a fraud claim. You know, you certainly can elevate. Just because a company doesn't honor your claim doesn't mean that you can't keep pursuing it. And that's a question of whether or not that return on investment is worth it. In other words, you want to spend that kind of time. But having said that, you know, I obviously can't speak to the issue here because I don't know enough to know, you know, one might think if it wasn't PIN protected, there's something in this, in their contract that said, if you don't have a PIN, you know, right. So like you probably had the opportunity to create a PIN. And so I don't know if somewhere deep in the contract, it says that there is some requirement that you do so. And if you don't, that level of protection isn't there for you. Hard to know. But having said that, it doesn't, I personally would, if I think it was an inaccurate denial of my claim, I would escalate it. And I don't know if you could do that within the company, but if you can't, you certainly could file a claim with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. You could file it with us, but this is a financial claim and they have jurisdiction over the large banks and over the credit card companies. And they would probably be more familiar with the protocols around when you can deny a fraud claim in the context of a fraudulent Visa charge or credit card charge rather. So my suggestion would be, if you think that they shouldn't have done that, I would file a complaint with the CFPB.
What is it?
The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. That's a federal, that is a federal agency. And it is, It is a financial agency that is designed predominantly to address issues in the financial sector that negatively impact consumers.
Tim, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Tyrone in Milwaukee next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for having me once again, my friend. You got it right this time. Good morning, ladies. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, yeah, Tyrone W. speaking. And going back out in the sunshine, blue skies, I had to run in and make this call because, well, maybe on a different line there, but I've just about had it with the robocalls and the telemarketers. I mean, even though I'm outside, but sometimes when I come in, I can't even complete my meal there. With somebody in some computer-based robocalls, you know, even the telemarketers calling, you can't even understand them. It's like they're calling from Calcutta, Mumbai somewhere, you know, New Delhi. Like, speak English, you know. But they get upset when you don't want to, I'm not buying anything. I'm not interested in what you're selling. They want to hurl insults and profanities at you and all this. I'm like, you know, where's this ignorance coming from? So I think the companies and the telephone book or whatever has been manipulated to where, you know, these computer bases have gotten this information, and you get, you know, 50 to 100 calls a day to where, you know, they're not talking about nothing. They're just, you know, messing with your medical stuff, you know. You know, we want to ask you about your medical. Well, I'm fine with my doctors. You know, if I need some help, you know, come to me when I call you, you know. But until I call you, don't call me, okay?
Well, so now what should Tyrone, I mean, all right, he's getting all these calls. Michelle, what do you?
Yeah. So he's getting all these calls. A couple things, you know, I hope that he's just hanging up and not engaging when he realizes it's not a friend or a neighbor down the road, that he's just disconnecting the call and not having a conversation. Certainly, some of these robocalls want you to press a number to be put on an internal do not call list. That can activate more calls because it shows that you'll actually engage and they'll turn around and sell your number. If it's a smartphone, hopefully his provider is starting to block some of these or indicating on the smartphone that it's scam likely or some other message to show that it's an unknown number and it's a scam. If the provider isn't doing that at this point, then certainly there are apps out there that can do that for that phone, and you can download an app that would then help kind of reduce and minimize some of these calls that are out there. But it is incredibly annoying. There are more and more surveys as well out there right now. So some of them are to sell things, but we're going to be in an election year, and so there are more surveys that come with that typically where people want to find out information and your interests and opinions on things. So there are more survey calls. That's your choice to participate or not. But again, some are legitimate surveys and some are scammers trying to survey. So trying to do that verification before you would engage with those calls is also going to be really important. But just disconnecting or not answering the phone is going to be step number one for Tyrone there.
Tom sent us an email. He had a cell phone and the company upgraded to a different system and he wants to get his money back because in January he had signed up for the year. He called them, but they would not return the money he spent for a year of phone service, even though the phone he has now does not work because of their upgrade. And he would like to get his money back because he can't use the 9 months left of the year that he paid for. He wants to know how to get his money back.
He purchased a cell phone and the upgrade didn't...
He had a cell phone and the company upgraded to a different system and he wants to get his money back because he had signed up for a year and he can't use it for the last 9 months of the year.
That sounds like a recipe to file a complaint with the department.
And
see if we can't mediate that issue. I mean, in all seriousness, that is, if you have it's in basic terms, if you have a contract with a company to provide you a service for a year and then they change their service such that you can't use it anymore, then they've they have not upheld their side of the contract. I don't know if it's as simple as all that. And my guess is there's probably more to the story, but certainly if that's what he's telling you right now, and that's how he's viewing it, at the very least, he should file a complaint with us and see if we can't help him have a conversation with the company and get to the bottom of what's going on. I don't know if Michelle has any other thoughts on that.
And maybe how to file and so forth too, a complaint.
Yes. So how to file with us. You can go to our website, which is datcp.wi.gov. And there's a link on our website to file a complaint. If you want to talk to somebody first, you can call our hotline at 1-800-422-7128, and they can walk you through that process.
No, 800-422-7128. And Michelle, did you have anything to add?
I think this is exactly the situation to file that complaint, because one, I agree, there's probably more information, but two, there's this contract to provide service. And yeah, like Laura said, they're not doing that at this point in time. So there needs to be something happening there.
Let's go to Tom in Milwaukee next. Tom, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Just about 2 weeks ago, I on my email account, I received an official-looking notice. My account is with Microsoft, and it said that there was some unusual activity going on in my account, and they wanted me to check on that and get back to them. I'm pretty cautious about that stuff, and so I checked the return address of the email notice. And sure enough, the return address was from Microsoft.com. And not only that, but the way it was addressed to me, when I took the mouse pointer and put it over that portion of this email notice, it had the subject matter of a couple of my emails that I had previously sent out. So it looked absolutely official. I did not respond to it, but I actually did go deep into my account and checked for the unusual activity, and it turned out to be completely false. The warning looked real enough. It said that someone had broke into my account from Nigeria, and it had the IP information, everything. But I changed my email address. I thought about 70% sure someone had broken in, but no one ever did break into the account. The whole thing was fake. The return address, I think the term is spoofed. It was a fake return address, and I don't know how they got the subject matter of my emails. This seems to be a new thing that's going around, at least from my experience.
Hmm. The subject matter of the email. Yeah, is that something you folks have seen?
Not this exact scheme. We've certainly seen where Instagram messages appear to have gone out. They're fake Instagram notifications that someone, a user, a fake email scares Instagram users into sharing passwords is what's happening. And it looks like you've gotten notification from Instagram and that you need to verify your account. So similar to what he's saying, but a different company, and they want you to go in and do some verification. The Instagram's not about suspicious activity so much as it's about violating copyright laws. So all of these have that twist to them where it's a big company that you don't want to have trouble with because you have accounts with them, and they want you to check into something and do a verification and now share information back with that company. Well, they know who you are and they're reaching out to you. You wouldn't need to share information back with the company using that link. So I think what Tom did here by changing his information, I would have suggested changing a password. But he researched on his own, didn't click those links, didn't share any information through that email. hovered over to see if things were legitimate. Those are all the tips that we, you know, provide consumers. So great job there, not engaging and trying to do that research. But they're getting very good. Here when he hovered, it looked like it still came from Microsoft, and it didn't. So that in itself is a little suspicious. You know, they're getting more advanced and being able to pull off these scams.
Tom, thanks again for calling. And actually, Mike from Evansville sent an email relating to Microsoft. Mike and his wife just got scammed by a pop-up that said something to the effect of your computer has viruses, call this number. And Mike's wife called in and they convinced her that they were with Microsoft and then downloaded something called Ultra Viewer onto her laptop and his laptop. They did get the program off the laptop, but are wondering if they have to worry, if they have more to worry about. And that, you know, that sounds like one where you might want to clean your, just sort of redo your computer, Michelle.
Yeah.
Or Laura.
So super, super common scam, the pop-up scam. So, you know, just for everybody listening, do not click on links in your pop-ups. I mean, if honestly, at this point, I feel like if you're a legitimate company and you are using a link in your pop-up, you are baking in the fact that a lot of people are avoiding it because there's so many scams that come that way. So in any event, whatever the pop-up says, even if it looks great, open up another window. Type in what you've seen with the word complaint, scam. You know, if you're really intrigued by it, make sure you use another source. Don't use the link that's been presented to you because, you know, in some situations, these links can just actually infect your computer with malware, right? So this one actually directed you to a 800 number, but oftentimes they just infect your computer. In this instance, they're having you call and you're purchasing a virus software. And, you know, a lot of times that is a way in which they can infect your computer. They can take over. They can steal data. They can, you know, you often hear about ransomware, which is when they actually hold your computer and your financial information and all your pictures and everything that's important to you, ransom. Lots of sort of nefarious things can happen if you turn over access to your computer through one of these pop-ups or 800 numbers or what have you. And so we see virus scams all of the time. So I'm glad to hear that you got it off of your computer. My suggestion would be, to take it into a professional to have them take a look at it and make sure that it is scrubbed. And then, you know, the other piece that I would think about doing if you do have your finances on there, is to look at get a credit report, take a look at your credit and see if anything has happened there. And then, you know, maybe think about a fraud alert on your account just as a prophylactic for a while. And in the event that this was a completely fraudulent entity and that they've had access to your finances to make sure that that's happening. And then you can go from there, determine whether or not you should change your credit card and that kind of thing. But, you know, typically when these types of things happen, the concern is they've stolen your identity and they've gotten a lot of your personal identifying information. So I don't know what you have housed on your computer, but I would certainly go through the process of checking your banking accounts for any odd activity, checking your credit report, putting a fraud account on it, getting your computers completely scrubbed, and then go from there. And if all of this sounds very daunting, you can also call our 1-800 number. We have, identity theft experts. They'd be happy to talk you through this and help you navigate those waters. So that's 1-800-422-7128. Good luck.
Yeah, good luck. It cost you a few dollars to get your computer scrubbed, both of them. But
yeah, you know, the other thing you can do if this company is out there, if it's a legit, you could file a complaint with us. I don't know enough to know whether or not we can do anything about it, but you can call that 1-800 number. You can file a complaint. You can get help with your identity protection and go from there.
There you go, Mike. Thank you very much for that email. Appreciate it. Michelle Reinen and Laura Sutherland, our guests today from the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, the Division of Consumer Protection. And I hope you'll join in with your complaints or comments or questions. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at consumer scam issues today with our two guests from the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection for Wisconsin, Michelle Reinen and Laura Sutherland. Questions for them, you can email us to ideas@wpr.org or phone in at 1-800-642-1234. Let's go to Austin in Lafarge. Hi, Austin. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I would just like to share two things. I kind of consider myself a student, so to speak, of ongoing scams and kind of how they evolve and change, more so just to keep my parents informed. Unfortunately, the older demographic is very often targeted. But one thing that I would like to point out regarding telephone scams, text scams that come kind of in the guise of Amazon, eBay, Microsoft, and the likes, they like to use the big company names that everyone knows. Very often, once people are scammed and then they realize it, the scammers from overseas will then sell on that information of those who they were able to successfully scam. And there's other scammer divisions that will call back on behalf of these companies saying, hi, we received information that you were the victim of a scam in our name, and do what's called a refund scam, where they in turn want to supposedly refund you this money in good faith because their information was hacked or so on. So for those listening, it's very important if anyone's offering you or claiming something with and not giving you time to process it and demanding urgency, do it now, or weird payment methods, asking to access your computer, they're all red flags, and it's very important that to keep kind of those things at the forefront of your mind when you get a call or a pop-up or something.
Yeah. Austin, thanks for calling. Michelle, I think you'd agree with what Austin had to say there.
Yeah, I'm glad Austin brought that up. We see very expensive versions of what he talked about, that refund scam as it relates to timeshare resellers. We've seen some very expensive versions of that. They even go so far as to say the government's involved, usually a foreign government being involved in the refund aspect of the scam. So great tip from Austin in trying to keep that forefront of mind there and when you're getting these calls or if you've been impacted by a scam previously.
Randy from Madison, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Randy.
Hi, good morning. I'm sure you and your guests are familiar with this thing that happens. Someone penetrates your computer system to the extent that they're able to send out their emails to all of your email contacts, you know, usually selling something. And I suppose maybe if people click on that, then they get access to their email list as well. Can they penetrate further if they choose to do so, or are these type of people just satisfied with being able to try to promote some product through your email list?
I don't know if Michelle has a comment on this. I mean, I definitely think it's a way in which they infiltrate your email account and could get access to your password and what have you. So I would absolutely encourage you, if this happens to you, to change your password. You know, it often happens when on social media accounts as well that are linked to your email. So a lot of us have a social media account or multiple social media accounts because many of them are owned by the same people. And then all of our email is linked to that. And so it's kind of like this domino effect. So, you know, you're talking to two consumer protection people, one of whom is totally not on social media. That is Michelle, me, I'm on, but I don't connect my account. So, you know, one of the challenges of the technological world is that, you know, there's so many ways you can interconnect things to make it easier for you, quote unquote. But what happens is when it's only as strong as the weakest link. And if one of those entities are weak, then it brings everything down. You know, one of the things I was talking to about a group chat I'm on is all these payment apps. A lot of my friends have their payment apps attached to their bank account instead of their credit card. That means that the money is gone once you use it, and that scammer has an access to your account. You know, now if you connect it to your credit card, you're paying 3% on every time you use the payment app. So, you know, there's ways in which you can protect yourself, but it can often cost money. It can be a little bit more cumbersome. But this interconnectivity comes at a price, both figuratively and literally. So, absolutely. I think that any kind of breach like that is not just for kicks and giggles. I think it really shows a vulnerability, and I would encourage a changing of your password and maybe disconnecting your links, to the extent that you do this, maybe disconnecting all your social media from your email account so that doesn't happen.
Thanks again, Randy. Appreciate it. Mai in Appleton, your turn. Hi, thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you. A couple of weeks ago, I have a almost scam, but we recognize it because I'm selling my stuff through Facebook. And one of them contacted me interested in one of my items. And they asking if he can pay through what you call cash apps. And I use that through my daughter. And after I give him her cash app, and he said he only pay, but he needs her email to confirmation. But and then my fault, I give him her email, and I contact her to see if she see any money through her cash app. And she say, this is weird, this is fishy. And I say, I know, usually cash app would let us know if somebody pay. And so he said, how far are you live from post office? And I say, why? He said, well, once you send it and you have the call tracking numbers, then his payment would automatically go through. It's because this is the business account. And so my daughter checked out his profile and looked up her cash app account, and it said pending. So, and I said, well, I'm not able to do anytime soon, but later he said, well, let me, you know. So finally, because my daughter works in the company that she can ship through her business, and I say, why don't you enter, you know, making the label? And sure enough, and he said, you know, this is because his account is a business. Why don't he pay me more so that I can reimburse his payment? I say, wait, this is wrong. I do not want any more of your payment, and I don't want anything from you. And I blocked him through my Facebook, and my daughter do the same thing, blocked him through her email. Now, my question is, even all that went through with her email account, can he still access to her account after she really blocked him?
Well, he could probably do it through another name or another email, couldn't he, Michelle?
He
Yeah, I'd be concerned. This has some signs of a small business scam that we had heard about a few months ago, where different buyers, if you will, of a small business were trying to get access to the multi-factor authentication and verification of different payment accounts and online profiles by asking some of the questions in email. So I would likely change any passwords that your daughter has at minimum if there's a different email account that she can redirect or put information to. That may not be the worst idea out there to redirect, because there are those signs of things. And it also had hints of what you were describing of an overpayment scheme where they offered to pay you again, but more to reimburse. And then that payment they'd make you would likely turn out to be false or not legitimate, and where you'd end up giving your money, your product, and get nothing in return and have handed over information. So I think it's really good you backed out, but for your daughter, if she can make some changes to those accounts so the access information is not the same, I think that'd be a good idea.
I do as well. My good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Michelle Reinen and Laura Sutherland, our guests today from the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection within our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade and Consumer Protection. They'll be with us till 12:30. We'll take a look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we will be back with Michelle and Laura. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for spending some of your day with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about consumer issues with our guests from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade and Consumer Protection. Laura Sutherland is the administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, and Michelle Reinen is Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Questions for them or advice needed, give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's go to Susan in Madison. Susan, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking me. I appreciate this program. Sure. Yeah, I've been getting text messages. They're kind of smutty. They're like, come on, for intimacy. That's one issue. Another one is I've had this phone number, I think, a couple years. I'm still getting a few calls. For instance, there's a message left to the previous owner. It seemed to, she described herself as a relationship counselor from a bank, and that seemed to be legit. Another question I have is, if I switch phones and I take my SIM card to another phone, will all of these types of text messages follow me? Thank you.
All right.
A bundle of questions. I love it. So in trying to kind of go through each one, we have heard of other consumers receiving some inappropriate text messages, and I would report those to your carrier, your provider there, to make sure that they're aware that those are coming through and see if they can track or reduce those. Certainly don't engage or anything if there's a way on your phone, if you have the technology to block those using the numbers they're coming from. Go ahead and use the technology on your device to do that. And as far as the phone number being from a previous individual and you're still getting some of those calls, you could certainly say no longer at this number, or if you know the name of the organization, call independently to let them know that you're receiving calls at a number that for an individual that's no longer you, if you care to engage that way, to let them know and that you don't want them contacting you anymore. But the final thing, as far as switching phones and will these text messages follow you, you're not changing your phone number. So if they're reaching out using your direct number versus just a blanket, that's entirely possible that they could follow you. But depending upon the technology that's used by your new provider, they could block them. They may have technology that would recognize the number isn't authentic, and you would have the potential that those messages could be blocked and not transmitted to you, again, depending upon what technology that carrier uses to screen legitimate calls and text messages type situations. So there is a potential you could see a reduction there.
Hmm. Susan, thank you very much for that question. Bill in Ladysmith, on to you. Hi, Bill.
Yes, good afternoon, Larry and guests. I have had an email account with CenturyTel since 2009. Last Sunday, I went to get all my email, and I was unable to. Finally, this morning, I ended up calling CenturyTel, and they say that they suspended my account because of too much spam. Why did they not notify me, and what can I do about this?
That one's to me. That's a great question. I've actually never heard of a company suspending an account because of too much spam. Did you call them and inquire? Because you're a long-time customer, it seems like they would want to honor your relationship. So, I mean, I guess my initial instinct is to call and see if you can't figure out what's going on and if there's another workaround, because there's ways in which you can put a spam filter on their apps that clean your email from spam. Maybe something as simple as that. But my guess too is that if you've had this for a long time, you have many, many family members and friends who have this email account, so you probably don't want to change. So why don't you first call the company and see what you can't resolve with them? And as I say, you can go to Consumer Reports and look at various spam filters. Some cost money, some don't, but they just go through and unsubscribe you and remove them for you. And then if that doesn't work, I would call and you want to maintain it, I would call our 800 and see if we can help mediate a solution that is more amenable to you. Cause that's just a very strange thing. I've never heard of that.
Yeah. And that number is 800-422-7128. If you didn't want to eventually. But the filters, isn't a bad idea anyway, to have either. Even the free ones do a decent job.
Absolutely. I mean, there is a fair amount of a requirement that you have to be able to unsubscribe, and there are unsubscribe buttons. But honestly, it's like whack-a-mole. They get right back on there. And then, of course, I think a previous caller did talk about how your data is sold. And so once you start getting them, you get more and more and more. And it's really, really difficult to cull, to stem the tide. So these services can help. And then once they do stem the tide, you can sort of get back to neutral. Which, Larry, I'm sorry I didn't get that caller, the previous one, because I wanted to offer him a job. He was so helpful. I didn't get his name. Maybe Michelle did. He was so helpful. Anyway, good luck. And do call our 800 number. We'd be happy to try to help you with that problem.
Bill, thanks again. Appreciate it. By the way, you can join in, too. The number's 800-642-1234. Let's go to Kathleen in Glendale. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi there. How are you?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I had a direct flight on April 2nd to Fort Myers, Florida. And first of all, it was delayed because of computer issues. Then we were diverted to Jacksonville. And we were told the first we could get out would be the 5th. So that would require Saturday, Sunday, and Monday night in a hotel. So I resorted to looking up trains, found a train. So I had to get a taxi to the train station the next morning. The train took us as far as Miami, which
then we had to get on a bus and didn't get to Fort Myers until 6 o'clock Sunday night. So over a day from when I had planned to be there. And I spoke to Southwest a couple times and I emailed them. And I was told by the first person I spoke to that they would credit my account from Milwaukee to Fort Myers, which was $167. And that's never come. And they said it would be 7 to 10 business days. Well, that was April 4th and nothing. They have given me a few vouchers, but it's not the cash. And I don't know that I would want to fly Southwest because besides the direct flights, they changed everything to not direct flights. And it's been a nightmare.
Hmm. So trouble with an airline and getting the money back from an airline.
Yeah, she can file a complaint with Consumer Protection. We will likely need to refer that to a federal agency that oversees. But given that this is about the repayment and the refund aspect, the mediation efforts may be able to be done with the Bureau of Consumer Protection there because it's not about the safety aspects or other items regarding the experience there. So really, I'm just saying all that, so don't be surprised if the complaint ends up being referred when you file it with us, but we'll try to get it to the right home if we're unable to handle that. So, you know, go online to datcp.wi.gov to file that complaint or call the Consumer Protection Hotline at 1-800-422-7128 to have a form sent out to you.
There you go, Kathleen. Good luck. Appreciate it. Annette from Cottage Grove sent us an email in regards to the person who called in with a fraud resolution that the credit or debit card company didn't resolve. Annette had a similar situation several years ago when a scammer was on an ATM in South Africa, stole $800 from her account. The bank who issued the debit card would not stand behind the problem or the promise. After months of disputes and escalation, there was no resolution. So Annette then went to the bank's Facebook page and sent a Facebook message to the bank. And within 30 minutes, she received a phone call from a bank employee who had the authority to resolve the issue, and the dollars were returned within 3 days. And then following this, Annette's sister-in-law had a similar situation with her credit card company, and Annette advised her to do the same thing. Her fraud issue was nearly $30,000 and was also resolved by sending a Facebook message to the credit card's Facebook page.
That's very impressive. I kudos to them. I don't have any. Well, listen, they used the protocols that were put in place and it didn't work. So they went to other measures. I think that seems reasonable.
Yeah, went to the Facebook page. Steve in East Troy. Hello. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi. Actually, Edgerton. But so I was just calling about the caller before who talked about getting an email that said, you know, his spam was too excessive and they were going to discontinue his account. The reason that sounds absurd is because it may very well be in and of itself a spam or a scam, if you will. And I think the advice to call the company is good, but please don't call the number on the bottom of that specific email because the spoof websites are so good, they look like the real company. You go to your bill, you use the number on your bill to call the company, and I've had to do that. And the company said, no, this is just a bunch of scammers out there trying to get you to call them. But they'll put a number on the bottom to resolve it, and you call that number, and you're not talking to the company. You're talking to whomever, and then the, you know, the scam starts. So that's my advice, is always go directly to your bill and the number on your bill, not whatever's in an email.
Yeah. That's such good advice, isn't it?
So many people we could hire today, Larry.
Steve, thank you very much. That's a very good piece of advice. Well, Donna in Hartford, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm disturbed at some of the things that are online, because when you go to Google a name, you can Google your name or someone else. And a lot of times what pops up is this website called mylife.com. And I know of at least two others, but I don't know the names of it right now. And what's on there is a lot of information about you or other people. And you don't have to pay anything to get that. These are sites where you can, you know, look into people's backgrounds and see if they have any police records and all that kind of thing. But just on the face of just going there and opening up the page, you see their name, their if they had different names, like if they had been married in the past, email address, phone number or numbers, names of people who are, you know, potentially related to them, their net worth, their employer, and their current and subsequent addresses that they may have been at. And you have to pay $89 annually to edit the information down so that people can't see all this information about you. How in the world is that legal?
Well, that's a good question, Michelle.
Yes, something I think that has been a national struggle back and forth as it relates to data privacy and legislation at a federal level, if we're a opt-in or an opt-out type of society and what that will result in. So I think we definitely hear what you're asking and understand what you're asking from a privacy perspective. So what I can leave you with today for all the listeners and everyone is, what you've done, Donna, to Google yourself is incredibly important to understand your digital footprint, to know what is out there about yourself and whether or not that information is accurate or inaccurate, and to what extent how broad that information is. There are some websites that have information that you can correct, that you can request, and consumer protection can help with some of that, depending upon what it is. Some of the information you mentioned on that website is public information through different records, government records that someone has chosen to compile all together into your single digital footprint for their website. So the exercise that you performed and knowing about that is really important. And I encourage everyone to go ahead and do that and be aware of what is out there about an individual, and then reflect on whether or not a security freeze is important and correct for you to lock down your Social Security number, and whether or not putting fraud alerts on credit cards and other vital records that you have or financial records is really important. And then reflect on the exercise that you have at looking at your medical explanation of benefits, and maybe some of your behaviors will change to be monitoring your identity in that way.
Donna, thanks for calling. Gary in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Gary.
Yeah, hey, my question's about online auctions. So I bought a truck on an auction site online. It was sight unseen. It was just pictures on the website. But they didn't disclose that part of the truck had a broken part on it. It's a bucket truck, but the bucket's got a big crack in it. And they didn't disclose that. Is there any recourse I have?
I might have to punt this to Michelle. I mean, lemon laws in the state of Wisconsin predominantly or only attached to new cars. And there's some pretty bad case law around disclosures versus misrepresentation. So in other words, actively saying you're doing something deceptive versus just not telling somebody, depending on the situation, it may not be a problem. And then when it comes to automobiles, Michelle, what do you think? What do you think, Michelle, in terms of auto repair?
Or this was a truck. Yeah, go ahead, Michelle.
Yeah, I don't know what kind of truck it was, a farm truck or a mechanical truck or a truck on the road truck. auctions are regulated by the Department of Safety and Professional Services as it relates to the auctioneers, and they may go so far as to do the online auction sites themselves. So I would encourage you to look at the Department of Safety and Professional Services website to see the extent of the auction atmosphere. And then I don't know if that had anything of sold as is and then just didn't describe the brokenness and with the lack of an inquiry what as is meant, if there'd be any limitations there as well. So, we do mediation, so it is something you could file a complaint, but I don't want to set a high bar of an expectation there. That we'd reach that resolution. And again, we may end up sending that to the Department of Safety and Professional Services, depending upon their scope of auctions.
Gary, thank you. John in Junction City, your turn. Hi.
Yeah, hi there. Thanks for taking my call. This is more or less a public service announcement about some email that's coming through on my email from TDS. And they're being misrepresented. And I checked this out with TDS, and they agreed it's a scam. What they're saying is it's an upgrade or a improvement of service, and it's coming from a company called Bend Broadband, also called Oath. And then they say it's part of Verizon. So they're misrepresenting themselves several ways. I've gotten 4 emails in 4 days saying I should upgrade.
So what should John be doing in this situation? Would he file a complaint?
Yeah, definitely file a complaint so we can look at the details, because there seems to be a lot of different lines in this spider web that he described there. So go to our website at datcp.wi.gov to file the complaint online, or call the hotline at 1-800-422-7128, so we can see what is truly being represented, if it's a scam or if it's different misrepresentations and deceit, to know who is really offering you or soliciting you the service and the desire to upgrade your service.
Sounds like good advice to me. John, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Michelle and Laura, as always, it's been interesting and fun. Thanks for your help today, and we'll look forward to your next visit. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks.
Michelle Reinen, Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Laura Sutherland is the Administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, all within our Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And they'll be back, and we will do this. I think their next show is August 4th, so they'll be back on August 4th, and we'll go over probably some of the same territory, but there's always something new out there that can create problems for you and for me as well. Well, it's Garden Talk tomorrow, and we're broadcasting live from the beautiful shores of Lake Superior, and I hope you can join us at the Bayfield Pavilion as we kick off Bayfield in Bloom. We'll have experts in all kinds of things, vegetables, flowers, herbs, perennial gardening, forest health. That's tomorrow at 11. Of course, you can listen right here on the Ideas Network if you can't make it to Bayfield, but if you can, I hope you will. We're going to have a meet and greet following the show and some food and so forth. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm taking my daughter Emily along with me this time, so that'll be kind of fun too. Thanks for listening, and please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mehler.